Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You suddenly computer, you? Or I'll send you back to a scrap heap in China where you belong.
Oh, sorry. Computer problems here today. We were within minutes of not being on the air. Oh, someday I'll be rich and we'll all own apples. But you know how that goes. Hey, we made it to Thursday. And, you know, I don't know if you realize this. You probably do. But the fact of the matter is, I don't like having little on-air fits like I had last night. I don't like getting emails telling me to take a long walk on a short pier. Thank you to all of you who have sent your notes of solidarity and agreement. They have continued to roll in through the course of the day. Tosh writing in earlier today, hear ye on your delineation between caring for Jews. My best friend is likewise a Jew. We've been friends since fourth grade. And Israelis. When it comes to anti-Semitism, are the Palestinians Semites too? Wouldn't that make the fascist Israelis anti-Semites? Just saying. I know. Well, suffice to say, I'm going to try very hard not to go there for a while. Although I did find, if you want to keep up with liberal thinking coming out of Israel, I can recommend a website to you. Mondo Weiss, M-O-N-D-O-W-E-I-S-S, if you've never read it before, The War of Ideas in the Middle East. I found amazing stuff there. I found a video of an Israeli Defense Forces soldier dancing around a woman, a Palestinian woman, who was bound and gagged and leaning against a wall. Yeah, like I said, I ain't going there. Can't make me, can't make me. What have we got out there today? Well, look, you know how I feel about praising good when good is done. President not sure today did the right thing on something. Yay, President not sure. You read some today. I got a note from Sandra about this alerting me to it, but it's kind of been all over today, and I'm sure a number of others among you have seen this as well. The Interstate Recognition of Notarizations Act of 2010. Notary Sojaks, as they have been known to be from time to time. The Interstate Recognition of Notarizations Act of 2010, otherwise known as the Robo-Foreclosure Bill, landed on President Obama's desk without much of anybody noticing until just now. And there's a lot of writing out there today about what it was, H.R. 3808, the Interstate Recognition of Notarizations Act of 2010. It was announced today that the White House, that President Obama will not sign it and will return the bill to the House of Representatives. What this thing did was very quietly removed impediments to interstate commerce, allegedly. But what it also did was make it possible. We kind of predicted this, didn't we? Sandra and I were talking the other night about the foreclosure legal crisis, and I said, isn't this just a massive, massive load of lawsuits waiting to happen? And then it occurred to me, you know, I remember when Congress jumped Johnny on the spot to protect vaccine makers against predatory lawsuits, you know, by the people that get killed by vaccines. Remember when that happened? That was done to the pig lick in Congress. Well, this had elements of that to it, and this basically immunized all these dodgy, dirty foreclosure proceedings that turn out not to have been done in any way that could remotely be deemed ethical, honest, or even legal, which is a de minimis standard, I would ask you to recall. Well, I've got the stutters tonight. The White House said that the president will not sign the bill. I don't know if it's going to... That not signing versus vetoing. I guess this is going to be a pocket veto. Why not just veto it? He's just going to pocket veto it. Notarizations are important for a large range of documents, including... This is the statement from the White House, including financial documents. As the president has made clear, consumer financial protections are incredibly important. And he has made this one of his top priorities, including signing into law the strongest consumer protections in history in the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. That is why we need to think through the intended and unintended consequences of this bill on consumer protections, especially in light of the recent developments with mortgage processors. Funny, they're processors now, not lenders. They're just like your Cuisinart. They're just processors. They're not banksters. Or lenders, or predatory lenders. No, they're just processors. But anyway, this thing was they almost did it to us, didn't they? They almost got it through. And what's interesting is, for all the talk that we've had over the course of the last couple of years about how the Republicans won't let anything happen in the Congress, this bill is an example of the fact that when they want to, they can get things done pretty quick and pretty slippery. This bill was passed by a voice vote from the House of Representatives. Therefore, if you look at the bill history, you will see the phrase, "No individual voting data is available." Everybody here who wants to pass this here bill... just say, hell yeah! Hell yeah! Motion carried. Bill passes. Send it over to the Senate. And over in the Senate, where we have a Democratic majority, at least in name, the same thing happened. The bill sat around in the Judiciary Committee and went nowhere. Until the jurisdiction of the bill was taken away from the Judiciary Committee. And the thing suddenly found itself on the floor of that august body where, presumably, the president pro tem of the Senate said, everybody here want to pass this here bill, going to make life a hell of a lot simpler for the banks that are really, they're slitting the throats of American homeowners. Everybody want to pass that bill. You just say, hell yeah! Hell yeah! And it passed. And the next thing you know, the damn thing's sitting on President Obama's desk. No cloture votes. No maneuvering. Harry Reid just took the little thing out and put it out there, and everybody, unanimous consent. I agree. What happened to the party of no? Well, when it's an opportunity to cover the asses of a bunch of fraud laden banksters, you can rest assured that they can get that thing to the president's desk in yesterday time. Now that the news has come out that there will be a pocket veto of the bill, however, you can rest assured also that the Republican Party will begin running ads asking questions, I don't know, along the lines of, why does that Kenyan anti-colonialist hate America's notaries?
They have to pledge allegiance to the flag 57 times before they can become a legitimate notary sojack. And that Kenyan anti-colonialist hates them. Probably because they don't have notary sojacks in Kenya and other communist countries with which he sympathizes.
And it'll suddenly become part of the advertising cycle all over the country, paid for with foreign money that's been funneled through the United States Chamber of Commerce. Bob, did Jim DeMint say hell yeah?
Absolutely!
No data, no individual data is available for the voting on this bill.
Hell yeah!
Ah, yes, Lottie, yes. You want a bangster and a blender. I want the video, too. So we don't really know... We really don't know what the genesis of this dumb thing was. Damned thing. Except that we do know... We do know... that it was quietly going to put to rest all the myriad manifest millions of problems that the mortgage lenders have stemming from the fact that they ran roughshod over homeowners all over the country. Yeah. And those ads I mentioned, those ads... you know, being funneled through the Chamber of Commerce. Yeah, don't look for... don't look for the Chamber of Commerce to be shedding any big old crocodile tears anytime soon. They are decidedly arguing that, oh, they didn't do nothing wrong. Except for the part about accepting, you know, foreign money. What's really weird, though, is that the Think Progress report from 2 days back about the Chamber of Commerce's foreign funding is generating quite the buzz. Why, it's been on Rachel Maddow's program, in which former Federal Election Commission Chairman Scott Thomas, Reagan and George Herbert Bush, thank you, Bart Kopp, and Bill Clinton were appointed by all. He told Rachel Maddow, if it turns out that any money in fact is being knowingly put into the process from foreign companies or foreign government sources, that would be a serious problem. Why, yes, it would. And resident scholar Norm Ornstein at no less than the American Enterprise Institute, which is about as right-wing as a place can get without actually wearing the spiffy black uniforms and goose stepping. He said, to me, there's absolutely no doubt that this is a backdoor way to get around what are long-standing and legitimate restrictions. This is happening not just because of Citizens United, it's also happening because we have an utterly worthless and feckless Federal Election Commission, there's the right-wing attack on the government agency, and an IRS code that needs serious toughening and revamping. We also have a very serious need to have the IRS look at regulations involving 527s and especially 501c4s, regulations that are being flouted and abused even as we speak. Then there's Fred Wertheimer, president of Democracy 21. They work on open democracy and governance issues. He said, the Center for American Progress article shows that we need an immediate investigation to determine whether the Chamber of Commerce is using foreign money to fund its $75 million campaign to influence the 2010 federal elections, since that would be illegal. If the chamber wants to make the case that they are keeping their foreign funds away from being spent on campaign activities, they ought to do so publicly and disclose how they are accomplishing this, since money is, and this is a fun word, I've always loved this word, fungible. Kind of makes it sound like something you want to throw Clorox on, doesn't it? Well, in this case, you would. Those fungible foreign monies. Public Campaign Action Fund's David Donnelly said the chamber opposes transparency in political spending. They should immediately pull any ads they're running, and any candidate benefiting from their spending ought to join us in demanding the chamber come clean. You don't count on it, because there's always an organization like the Center for Competitive Politics out there saying that, we should just trust the Chamber of Commerce. In America, that's exactly how it's supposed to work. Individuals and groups are not presumed to have violated the law based on a bogus blog post from a political opponent which cites tenuous evidence to show likely violations of the law. So, Chamber of Commerce? Wow. Hey, wait a minute. Who until recently sat on the board of the Chamber of Commerce? Just saying. I've got it right on the tip of my tongue. Come on. Sleazy, greasy-looking guy. Has one of those little pencil-thin mustaches. The Boston Blackie kind. Two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket and an autographed picture of Andy Devine. Who was it? You know, the kind of a trundling, bulbous, hateful bastard. Likes to send miners to their deaths in gassy holes in West Virginia. Come on. He was a member of the board of directors of the United States Chamber of Commerce. He cut his teeth in the mining business, working with the apartheid regime as part of Royal Dutch Shell. In South Africa, oh, who could that be? Dadgummit, there's pictures all over the place of him swanning around the French Riviera with a bought off West Virginia Supreme Court judge. Oh, Don Blankenship, absolutely. There's your Chamber of Commerce. So, is it any surprise that they're sleazy? They're staffed with sleazy. They've got a surfeit of sleazy. They have a surplus of sleazy. I imagine they're still probably, or do they? I don't know. Maybe it's kind of like House Harkonnen from Dune, you know. Do they clean up the sleazy when people like Don Blankenship leave? I don't know. But you know what? I can't do it. You can't just reference something like pencil-thin mustache and not sit back and enjoy it. Yeah, let's get in a good mood.
Now they make new movies in old black and white. The happy endings where nobody fights. So if you find yourself in that nostalgic rage, honey, jump right up. Show your age. I wish I had a pencil and mustache, the Boston Blackie kind, two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an old.
Oh, this isn't working out. One more time. Yeah, we heard this part.
A happy ending where nobody finds.
Everybody loves a happy ending.
If you find yourself in that nostalgic grave,
and I do, I do.
Jump right up and show your age. I wish I had a pencil and mustache, the Boston Blackie kind, two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an autographed picture of Andy Devine.
As musicians.
And I can solve some mysteries too. Pencil and mustache. be. That's why I wish I had a pencil thin mustache, the Boston Blackie kind, a two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an autographed picture of Andy Devine. Oh, I could be anyone I wanted to be. Maybe Sway Girl Flynn or the Sheik of Arabic. If I only had a pencil thin mustache, then I could do some cruising. Yeah, Brim Cream, my little devil, do you? Oh, I could do some cruising, too.
Dadgum, that's just about like audio volume for me. Kind of hard to be in a bad mood with music like that going on. And you know, I'm not going to be because I got an email rolling in from Ron in Raleigh, and it's something that David in Tennessee noted to me as well regarding that fur and money. Ron says, didn't the Repig Lickens want to throw Al Gore in the Gray Bar Hotel because he allegedly took fur and money from the Buddhists?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I seem to remember during the largest peacetime expansion of the United States economy in history, you know, the Clinton 90s, I seem to recall right-wingers and babbling narcotic-addicted gas bags like Flush Flimball on the radio every day. My friends, what about Charlie Tree? What about Charlie Tree, my friends? Charlie Tree owns a Chinese restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas, where Bill Clinton was known every day to pick up a to-go order of General Tso's chicken and take it to the MENA airport, where he gunned down scads of people, and Hillary laughed and giggled and dipped the little chicken chunks in the blood. I remember that. Charlie Tree's filthy Chinese money has completely infected our American political system. That foreign Chinese money will be the flag is falling, my friends. You remember that? I remember that. Now, though, well, you know, you got Rupert Murdoch out there talking about the Chamber of Commerce, and he says, I never thought the Chamber of Commerce was particularly partisan. Yeah, they're rather a tame little group. Now I'll get email about my bad, bad, bad Rupert Murdoch Australian accent. That's all right. Sorry, guys, I'm just playing. Well, I'd love an Australian vacation where there isn't any Flush Flimball. It kind of reminds me of that old cartoon about the cat who hated people and he winds up on the moon. Yeah, I know. But really, isn't it interesting to watch that whole sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander thing? No. Yes, Ron, as a matter of fact, a plethora of sleazy. Kevin is in South Korea, and he says, Bob, I have an extremely difficult time picturing that pig Don Blankenship in Monte Carlo. Cary Grant, he is most definitely not. It's more like a bull in a Tiffany China shop. Yeah, you could say that. Or, I don't know, a Poland-China hog in a fine dining room, or perhaps one of those Monte Carlo casinos where Sean Connery as James Bond used to deal. You know, no. But he was there. We've got the photos. You know, you can just imagine, can't you, Don Blankenship on the French Riviera, sitting there with Spike Maynard, congressional aspirant, and asking the waiter to bring ketchup, you know, for his bouillabaisse. There's a reason some Americans should not be allowed outside the... Right. Because I'm pretty sure, I mean, Don Blankenship, you know, this guy comes from the Kentucky-West Virginia border area down on the Tug Fork River. And he got his... He's just an accountant. No offense to accountants, but he's a guy with an accounting degree from Marshall University. I can't imagine him not looking at that little fork up there in the middle of the place setting, the one that you use with the fruit de mer. I'm going to take this, I'm going to jam it right in Cecil Roberts' ass. It's just the right size. Take that, Cecil.
No, I understand. I understand your problem, Kevin. I really do. But he really was there. I want me some. Bring me the ketchup for my beef bourguignon.
What do you mean there ain't no biscuits in this here hotel? I don't see no five stars. Damn it. You can take this crusty-ass stale bread back with you,
because you got to remember, Don Blankenship was actually proven in court to have thrown his Happy Meal at his maid. No, I'm not kidding.
God darn it, ain't you got some decent American food here? I want a Hot Pocket. I'm a billionaire. I want a Hot Pocket.
Kevin noting, that is why in situations like that you say you're Canadian.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Robert. Phase 5, thank you. Your Australian accent was rather good.
Don't encourage me. It only gets worse. But, we've got a lot of stuff to... We've got a lot of stuff to do this evening. You know how last night I got the effed up email from the guy who wanted... You're a Jew hater! Woo! Well, after the show, I got sort of only at greater length the American version, only not having to do with anti-Semitism or anything like that. It was just... I don't know. It was the perfect end to a perfect evening, I suppose. Yeah, really. It's kind of the extension of that whole old infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, and one of them will eventually, you know, type Hamlet. Well, there are too many libertarians in the world for one of them not to eventually find me. And that happened last night. Now, I responded to this email, not in any kind of nastiness. I tried to be sane about it, because it's one of those things that, I mean, when you see what actually happens when right-wing nuttery gets hold of a human brain, you could almost sit and weep. I'm going to read this email all the way through to you. It deserves to be shared. The gentleman who wrote it, Richard, not one of our Richards. The gentleman who wrote it, Richard, put a lot of time into this, and I think it deserves a response. And I will leave it to you to respond as well. Because you know what? I do this more or less professionally. Part of this, the whole purpose of this program is for the rest of us to sort of bone up on our responding to the right-wing skills. Because it's that whole, let's sit quiet and hum a few bars of Kumbaya and maybe they'll go away phenomenon that has largely put us in this little fix we're in. So this came in right after the show ended last night. Otherwise, I would have done it on the air then, but I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I would have just sort of devolved into a blithering, blathering mess. This has, of course, to do with the story that will not go away and probably should not go away. This has to do with the house that was allowed to burn down in Obion County, Tennessee. Hi, Bob. Caught your show in the internet. Listened for the first time. First time listener. I have a feeling you won't be a second time listener. Caught your show in the internet. Listened for the first time as you told the story of the home burning and the fire department watching. My first thought about this fire was disgust. Having served on two different volunteer fire departments, I can tell you the firemen were agonizing. Okay. Now, I promised I'm just going to read this all the way through without comment. I agree that something should have been done, but it should have been done long ago. The local municipality should have instituted some fair tax that wouldn't have left its citizens unprotected. Foolishness of government. If any of you require blood pressure medicine or anything, we'll take a few seconds for you to go and make sure you got today's dose in. Should the fire department have put out the fire after someone was irresponsible and didn't pay their fire coverage? Regrettably, no. Should the responsible be required to take responsibility for the irresponsible? A guy who wastes money on the lottery, booze, cigarettes, and doesn't buy life insurance. He dies at the age of 30. Should the responsible folks be required to give his family money? I like your Amish community barn-raising illustration. The fact is, all those people volunteered to help each other out. Free will. I'm sure if a community member never showed up to help at a community barn-raising and then asked for help on his barn, I wonder what would happen. Remember the story of the little red hen? Again, shall the responsible be required to take responsibility for the irresponsible? I say no. If the able-bodied don't take responsibility for their lives, I see no reason for the responsible to be mandated by the government to help them. If, as an individual, they elect to do so, that is their option. If the irresponsible get the benefits of responsibility without the work of a responsible person, they won't do the work of the responsible. That is a fact. Look at the rate of out-of-wedlock births before all the government aid to unwed mothers, and the numbers now. It is immoral for our elected officials to extort money from the responsible to give to the irresponsible. Before you call me callous, realize that I am self-employed, and my family makes numerous sacrifices to keep afloat. I've never owned a new car. My current car has over 200,000 mile on it. I also have two irresponsible brothers who have wasted their lives. Drugs, booze, jails, out-of-wedlock kids, etc. For decades, I've tried to help and encourage them. Offered them jobs, they said no. Made an excuse, or they wouldn't show up. Recommended them to jobs, etc., etc. The cold, hard facts are they have chosen to watch TV and play computer games rather than find marketable skills. They have chosen drugs, smokes, and alcohol over a healthy lifestyle. I served in the military and put myself through college slowly without any grants, scholarships, or debt. My brothers played around. If we constantly pick up after our children, blame others for their mistakes, and bail them out when they make mistakes, they just might not be the most industrious individuals in our society. As a matter of fact, they may become a drain on our society. At some point, those with ability, who act irresponsibly, should pay the natural consequences for their laziness, or they will never become productive. Please note that I am not saying that those who can't take care of themselves. Our society has a responsibility to the needy, contrary to what evolution would tell us. The government is woefully inadequate at determining need from want. Just look at the corruption at every level that arose from the government handouts during Katrina. One of my cousins told a story that he witnessed firsthand. It illustrates how some people want handouts, not a hand. He watched as thousands came to a location offering aid to the hurricane victims. The next day, at the same location, he watched as a couple dozen of the hurricane victims attended a job fair held by local businesses. Don't cry for all the unemployed, either. I know a female lawyer who became unemployed several months after having a child. Months later, I talked to her husband, who chuckled at her unemployment, saying, "As long as the government is willing to pay her to stay home with our daughter, she isn't going to be looking very hard for a job."
When the benefits dry up, she'll find a job. A friend of mine told me the same thing after he became unemployed. He was going to milk the system of unemployment benefits as long as he could, while working for cash with a friend of his. I have a relative whose husband works in his family's restaurant business. According to him, immigrants come to the U.S., get federal loans to start a business, take money under the table, and don't pay back the loan. They go back to their nation of origin and live like kings. You and I pay back their loan. Bottom line, people will abuse the system. The rich do, and the poor do. So do the middle class. So would those who thought that the fire department would put out the fire if their house caught fire, even if they didn't pay their fire fee. I bet you a whole lot of people got caught up on their fire department fees after this hit the news. And the unemployed find jobs just as their benefits are about to dry up. Funny how that works. Signed, Rick. Another Rick. Not one of our Ricks. I tried to read that straight. It was a struggle not to offer commentary along the way. I hope you know that. Let's see if this is what I think it is, because this is what it reminded me of.
Hey, what do you got in here, rocks?
Are you kidding? When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance. The man's a menace. Cut that off! Music is a violation of my personal privacy. He's breaking the law.
Really? You know, I've always been fascinated with the law, sir.
Here
comes. Really? What areas?
Oh, all areas. Personal privacy, noise statutes. You know, I plan to go to law school after I graduated, but, looks like my folks don't have enough money to put me through college.
Well, the world needs ditch diggers, too.
Well, the world needs ditch diggers, too. Exactly. Because that's where this kind of stuff comes from. Let's go back. This letter, I wish I was a little bit better at manipulating the website than I am. Because I'd like to put this letter up as just poster child for what happens to a country when you've got 20 or 30 years of Rush Limbaugh screaming, "Personal responsibility, my friends! Hand me the OxyContin." This is what happens. This is the sort of see John Galt take on his own personal responsibility, go John Galt, go, sort of Dick and Jane version of Atlas Shrugged and anarcho-Randianism. The able-bodied! I know another nation that had a fetish for the able-bodied. The people who weren't able-bodied got to take these showers, don't you know? Yeah. This drives me just crazy. Because, you see, there's a standard in here. There's this standard of responsibility that is set up for all of us to measure ourselves by this writer's standard of personal responsibility.
But he neglects to realize that there's always someone more pious, more parsimonious than he, whose standard of personal responsibility he could not beat. How personally responsible could a person possibly be when they've never owned a new car? It is irresponsible not to contribute to the national economy by purchasing a new car every 5 years. Anything less than that is un-American. Notice, there's something at work in here. You'll notice the little apocryphal stories about the no-good lawyer laying around with her baby hanging off of her tit. And the story of the no-good brothers who won't get a job. And the story of the no-good guy who wouldn't pay the fire department bill because he was obviously a scofflaw. Well, that's the way right-wing nuttery works. You take an individual story, and then you extrapolate it to the entirety of a given suspect class. Remember Ronald Reagan and his creation of the welfare queen? Getting out of, taking her vast, trundling African bulk out of her welfare paid for Cadillac and going in and spending her food stamps? Yeah, that's still with us today because Newt Gingrich is out there babbling around about, he doesn't understand, no, the Democrat Party is the party of food stamps. The Republican Party is the party of paychecks. That just happened. It doesn't go away. And you know what? If you are imbued with uniquely American, to quote Dim Sun, if you are imbued with that uniquely American characteristic whereby you fetishize your own good fortune and use the ill fortune of others in order to bolster one's own sense of self-worth and dignitas, those stories are great. You know, one of the earliest myths of the American white European settlement is that of John Smith, who, looking upon the ill fortune of others, said, "There, but for the grace of God, goes John Smith." It is supposed to be a reminder that ill can fall upon any of us at any time. There, but for the grace of God. In other words, because God likes me better, he hasn't let that awful thing happen to me. And it gets expanded upon and expounded upon in this culture to the point where we look at the misfortune of others and say, well, they're that way because they're not as good as me. If you will open your Bibles for a moment to the book of Job. Oh, I know you hate it when I do this. But this is worthwhile. There it is. Okay, I want Job in the King James Version because we all know God spoke King James English. Never mind the fact that, well, King James was queer as a $3 bill, but, well, don't tell the Baptists. They're already head up over yoga anyway. We'll get to that. If you'll turn in your Bibles to the book of Job, brethren and sistren, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, and 3,000 camels, and 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she-asses. Kinky Job. And a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. You know, when brothers and sisters sit down to start eating and drinking together in the Old Testament, it ain't going to come to no good end, but we'll leave that part by. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them. Oh, you sanctified glory! And rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. You know, we've had some pans of biscuits come out of the oven here, and I never knew that Agnes was doing religious duty, but don't tell her I said that, Jesus Christ. And offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. Can we stop for a minute? Now here's Job, so obsessed with his own righteousness, that he's out there doing expiation in the name of his sons in case they might have screwed up and sinned somewhere along the way and done forgot. That is a man with mixed up priorities. Now there was a day, saith the book of Job in the 6th verse of the 1st chapter, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Sons of God? Wait, what? Huh? I thought there was only one. There can be only one. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them, Shatan, Satan. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Where you been, old boy? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. I've been on walkabouts, what I've been. See what happens when you encourage me? And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? That there is none like him in the earth. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm caught up in my hillbilly. That there is none like him in the earth? A perfect and an upright man? One that feareth God and escheweth evil? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made an hedge about him? Hast thou not made an hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? He's hedge poor, Lord! Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there come a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. See, it ain't never going to come to no good. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, not the point, the edge. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there also come another. This was a bad day. And said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep. So much for them burnt offerings, huh? And the servants, and consumed. They got struck by lightning, but in the Bible it gets turned into the fire of heaven. Because these ancient peoples were too goddamn dim to know what lightning was. The fire of heaven hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was speaking, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels. You know how it is when the Chaldeans get around your camels. Ain't nothing good going to come of it. And fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword. Were these swords like you get in kindergarten that have rounded ends and it's only, I don't know. With the edge of the sword. And only I am escaped, I'll tell thee. Well, while he was yet speaking, they're coming. At this point, Job's got to be looking up and going, screw it, take a number. And said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house. Thank God it didn't hit the central walls. And it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. Interesting. There's no mention of the daughters, only that the house fell upon the young men. I guess the women just didn't count. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And then Job arose and rent his mantle. I don't know why he didn't lease it, but he rented it. And shaved his head
and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked I shall return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. That's three paragraphs of Job. It goes on like that for a long time. Until finally, after all this crap goes on, Job gets an interview with the Almighty. And he says, Hey, God, what did I do wrong? You know, rather than our friend Rick here, who wrote the email and telling us what right he has done, and how everybody else is all screwed up, Job says, What did I do wrong? Why'd you do this to me? Because, see, after a while, Satan comes back and says, Oh, sure, I took everything away from you, and he's still praising you. Sure! But that's only because you didn't let me give him the dribbling shits. God says, Well, that's fine then. Afflict him with the boils. Whatever else, just don't kill him. And then Satan gets real cute. And, you know, Job's wife, that constant source of comfort, comes over and says, Job, have you had enough? You know, curse God and die. Get it over with. I mean, enough is enough, really. I'm not up for the frogs and locusts. And Job rented another garment, or, I don't know, a tuxedo or something, and said, Woman, get thee away from my face. So eventually Job gets to have a little sit-down with God. You know, a cup of coffee, maybe one of those little hard almond cookies that you dip. He says, Why'd you do that to me? What did I ever do to you? There I was, offering you the burnt offerings, even just on the odd chance that my sons and daughters might have screwed up somewhere along the way and walked under a ladder or stepped on a crack and broke their mother's back. There I was. Why'd you do that? And God gives him this lecture about, well, were you there when I laid the foundation of the earth, boy? Huh? Were you? Were you there when I spit on the mud and made the oceans to flow? Were you, boy? Were you? No, you're a piss ant. I did it 'cause I could. Not the most inspiring ending of a book, even for the Bible. I did it because I could. I'm God, and you're not. And see, I mean, I'm not just sitting here trying to waste your time or anything. Because that's kind of the attitude that our friend Rick here, who wrote me this letter, is manifesting. I'm good, and the guy whose house got burnt down isn't good enough. Because if you look, and I responded, and I said these things, what if the guy whose house got burnt down, what if the guy actually wrote the check? What if he could go down to the bank, because his house is burned up and all his records in it, but what if he could go down to the bank and say, I want you to look up my records here, because I'm pretty sure I wrote that damn check to the city, and they didn't come put my fire out, and they look and they go, well, son of a gun, you did. Right here it is, City of South Fulton, $75, January the 1st, 2010. What if he wrote that check to the city and the city just didn't credit him appropriately? How do we make his house and his memories and his three dogs and one cat reappear? Because, see, that happens in the book of Job. Once God is, once Satan is defeated and says, well, okay, you win, God. That's one good man. Because, I mean, we have shit all over him, and he is still loving you. Well,
then God gives him back 6,000 camels, 14,000 sheep, 12 sons, and 6 daughters. But even as a little tiny Baptist down in the basement of the church with the little old blue-haired ladies, and trust me, they do not let you read Job early on. That's the nice thing about the basement of the Baptist church. They give you, do unto others as you would have him do them do unto you, and for God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son, that whosoever might believeth upon him should not perish but have everlasting life. You get that. God is love. That kind of thing. No, no, no. You don't get Job until you're good and jaded. Because Job is supposed to be a lesson to you to shut up and not ask why rotten crap happens to decent people. The official Protestant the explanation for the book of Job is shit happens. Not much in the way of a theology in my lights. But even way back when my mother just loved Job. And by the way, for the trivia fanatics out there, if you happen to own a Bible called the Jerusalem Bible, which is quite fascinating because they are legitimate attempts to do scholarly translations from as reliable of sources as possible. The book of Job in the Jerusalem Bible was actually the translation for that publication was actually done by J.R.R. Tolkien. No kidding. But there aren't any hobbits in Job. But even as a kid reading Job, I was like, wait a minute. God gave him back the sheep? Okay, I can get the sheep getting replaced. God gave him back the camel? Yeah, camels, more camels. Twice as many she-asses, twice as many 1,400 yoke of oxen. I'm down with all of that. But then along in that laundry list, it says, and he gave him back twice as many sons and twice as many daughters, and Job was just happy about that. Are we to understand that Job never looked back upon those sons that he loved so much that he went and actually sacrificed to God Almighty for them lest they sin and not know it? I mean, you got to be loving somebody a bunch to spend your time worrying about their sins. But Job was apparently okay with it because God told him off and he knew his place and he went humbly back to being the little pissant human that God explained to him he was. Well, if you'll forgive me if that is part of what was on my mind as I read this letter. What if the guy had paid his fire service fees and he called, as I noted the other night, he called 911 and they had the list wrong. They didn't have the latest updated master list. What if he calls 911 and before the 911 operator can make the call, check the list, check it twice, make the call to the fire department, what if the 911 operator has a goddamn stroke and can't speak anymore and falls over dead? You get my meaning? The problem with this, the unmitigated horseshit of this personal responsibility cult that the right wing has created out of apocryphal stories of individuals extrapolated upon entire populations. The problem with all of that is that it is predicated on falsehoods. You know, there's another Bible verse out there that says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." That's a way of saying we have all made our mistakes in time, and we ought not be held. Have them held against us. Now, I'm using all this Bible stuff because there's that little backhanded comment in this letter where he says, "Please note that I am not saying that those who can't take care of themselves, our society has a responsibility to the needy, contrary to what evolution would tell us." That means he hates evolution. He's gotten that part of the Kool-Aid, too. These lines about the Amish community barn raising, you know, if you didn't go to the barn raising, I'm sure nobody'd help raise his barn. You know what? In a tight-knit community like the Amish, they will shun your ass for not showing up to the barn raising. Unless you were grievous ill or sick. Or dying. Pretty harsh. They'll also shun you for wearing buttons. they'll shun you for, any number of dumb shit. Again, shall the responsible be required to take responsibility for the irresponsible? I say no. I presume also that this Rick would say no to the biblical query, am I my brother's keeper? Because, you know, that was the smart-ass remark that Cain made. Remember, Cain brought some zucchinis and squash and a couple of onions, a little bit of garlic, some potatoes maybe. No, this was the Near East. They hadn't found America yet and screwed that up. Probably no zucchinis either. No pumpkins. Okay, he brought some rutabagas and some turnips and some onions and maybe a little curly-leafed parsley and laid it on the altar and said, look, God, there's your offering. And God was not pleased. Because who wants turnips and rutabagas and a little curly parsley, maybe some onion? Blech! So Abel shows up, and he puts his offering on the altar, and it's a nice, freshly killed, bloody, dead animal. And God is pleased. Because God likes nothing better than the smell of burning hair, apparently. And it made Cain so dadgum jealous that as soon as Abel's back was turned, he went and he slew him with the edge of his sword, because he probably had a blunt one too. And his blood, and Abel's blood ran out on the ground and cried out to the earth for justice. Or a band-aid even. And God said to Cain, hast thou seen thy brother Abel? Whereabouts would he be? And you can just imagine, Cain sitting there with his hands kind of behind his back, taking them long-legged strolls. I don't know. Hey, God, am I my brother's keeper? Huh? Well, it turns out we are. At least if you buy into the holy book business. And that whole brother's keeper thing, the people who plagiarized the older myths to create the Old Testament, they don't have a lock on that. It happens in Buddhism, it happens in Hinduism, it happens in Islam, it happens in animism. It happens in the religions of the Plains Indians and the Mesoamerican Indians and the Peruvian Indians. It happens in the jungles of Asia. Because, as noted a couple of nights ago on the program, we really are all in this together. Drugs, booze, jails, out of wedlock kids. You know, we can feel ever so much better about ourselves when we can look out at all those people doing those drugs and booze and getting in jail and having out-of-wedlock kids, as if having an out-of-wedlock child is the equivalent of violating the criminal law. You notice? They're equivalent in this sentence? Bastardy is a crime to a right-wing libertarian. Guy who wastes money on the lottery, booze, cigarettes, doesn't buy life insurance. Jesus, have you ever been around a life insurance salesman? It's enough to put you off the concept, really. The guy with the Herb Tarlick jacket, the bad comb over, the 30-year-old briefcase, the polyester pants. Can I tell you about our universal life policy? No! See, if you go back and you read the book of Job, it doesn't say that Job was running around talking about all those sacrifices he was making. But on the other hand, here we get told, my family makes numerous sacrifices to keep afloat. Really? You're the only one. Look at the rate of out-of-wedlock births before all the government aid to unwed mothers. Yeah, because before all that government aid to unwed mothers, we just took them and did what the Romans and the Greeks did and exposed them on a high hillside, yea, verily, and let them perish. That's what I love. I love it when a right-wing pro-life libertarian type starts talking about this. All that government aid to unwed mothers. Because, you know, it's a lot more fun watching a baby starve. Should the fire department have put out the fire after someone was irresponsible and didn't pay their fire coverage? Regrettably, no. If you were to look at the rules of the federal rules of evidence, you would find an objection in there for statements like that called assuming facts not in evidence. What evidence is there that Mr. Kranick in Tennessee was irresponsible? None. None. Like he said, he's human, and sometimes you just forget. This is amazing. This thing, and News Ninja Susan said, send me the email, and I'll post it on the web. I think what we need to do is we need to post it on the web, and then I need to excerpt out this portion of the program and mount it up there, although it'll have to be done in chunks because I don't think we can put 45 minutes in one fell swoop. But this is, I mean, I sat stone cold sober and read this thing and reread it and reread it and reread it. And I thought, my God, what will this nation come to if people like this get hold of the reins of government and start subjecting people to an arbitrary standard of goodness or responsibility? Because that arbitrary standard will always be something that the arbiters think they can live up to and expect us not to. Because the fun is in watching us fail. This whole thing is astonishing. Don't cry for all the unemployed either. Where are the jobs? Even Flush Flemball and Beck and Hannity and that and Savage and that filthy crowd, they delight in saying jobless recovery, jobless recovery, jobless recovery. As if somehow the tanking of the economy were actually Barack Obama's fault when the thing went down the toilet before he was ever even inaugurated. This is all just astonishing to me. You know, I ran across a story earlier today about a move in Missouri. Have you seen this? The teabaggers in Missouri have a full-out campaign against something that's on the ballot there called Proposition B. And it's astonishing. Phyllis Schlafly. You know, I hope I'm up to speed on my Schlafly shots. Well, that joke didn't go anywhere because I can't talk. Proposition B out in Missouri mandates, because Missouri is the home of some of the most hellish puppy mills in America. God, all the Jesus, they're awful. And Proposition B would place new regulations on puppy mills requiring, quote, sufficient food and clean water, necessary veterinary care, sufficient housing, including protection from the elements, sufficient space to turn and stretch freely, lie down, and fully extend his or her limbs, the puppies or dogs, regular exercise, and adequate rest between breeding cycles. How do you get up in arms about something like that? It's a puppy. A puppy. Who doesn't like puppies? Who enjoys watching puppies suffer? And suffer they do. And the breeding dogs suffer because no sooner is the bitch done with one litter than she's off whelping another one in a lot of these mills. Well, I'll tell you who. The Missouri Teabaggers and the Teabagging Patriots have started an organizing campaign around defeating this ballot proposition. There was one teabagger who said, this is all about the big government or the big company trying to tell people what to do. There's a place, a little town in Missouri called Mexico, Missouri, and they had them organizing meeting at Coach's Pizza World. And that's where that line came from. Government or a big company trying to tell people what to do? As I said, Phyllis Schlafly and her Eagle Forum are involved, as is Sam What's-a-Booger, or Wurtz, not a Joe, not a plumber, is involved. He's on the team with the Alliance for Truth. They're funded by the puppy mills themselves. He's got a blog post out there that features an animal rescue officer kicking down the door of a home. And the Missouri Cattlemen's Association is all up in arms because they're afraid that if the measure passes, that the Humane Society... Well, if they manage to pass the measure, then the next thing you know, the Humane Society will be wanting to better the conditions for a bunch of damn cattle that's standing up to their kneecaps in shit. Right? Yeah, this is how teabaggers think. Just like our buddy Rick here wanted Mr. Kranich's home to burn, it was a necessity. Sadly, yeah, no, they shouldn't put out the fire. And yet at the same time, I was reminded that back in June, and I went and looked it up, I don't have it handy right now, back in June, the teabaggers got all upset over a proposition in a community that would have required trash to be picked up. It would have required homeowners to pay for garbage service and have their trash picked up. No, really. So on the one hand, they don't want to force anybody to have their trash picked up. But on the other hand, when a rural guy burns his trash and the fire spreads to his home, they want to make him personally responsible by letting his home burn to the ground with three dogs and a cat inside. And if Granny was there and couldn't get out on her walker, that's just tough titty for Granny. Right? Right. Wing nuts. Cognitive dissonance. By the way, our good friend Matt Osborne over at OsborneInc.com and at CrooksAndLiars.com has an excellent post today on right-wing nut cognitive dissonance. You might find it interesting. You know, that's what we're dealing with here. The cognitive dissonance and life reduced to a zero-sum game for right-wingers, libertarians, repiglicans, and anarcho-randians. The only way that they can feel good, as I noted, they set these standards up so that they can be justified in saying, yea, verily, look at me, Job, how righteous am I. In order for them to feel good about themselves, they have to be able to watch somebody lose in order that they may feel like winners. That's the only conclusion that I can reach. You've got almost all the lines lit up. We'll see who's actually a phone call and who's not. Jump right in here in a little bit. We're going to take a quick break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Emphasis on listener-supported, by the way. The PayPal button is over at headonradionetwork.com. Let's not let the radio station burn down. What do you say? The radio network, as Kate noted a couple of nights ago. There's also a snail mail address if you just can't stand dealing with PayPal, and I understand if you can't. But this is America's listener-supported liberal voice, This is The Horn.
I once had a career, used to have a home. Then came that new word downsize, and all those things are gone. I was headed for retirement. I was gonna buy a yacht, but now I have this campfire in this vacant parking lot. I spent my severance package trying to start anew, until flipping burgers was all that's left to do. But to my disappointment, those jobs had all been filled by teachers and professors developing new skills. So keep the hope fires burning, making spirits bright. White collar dumpster divers, trash cans all alight. Word of relief has made its way to us tonight. We're gonna get a tax cut. It's gonna be alright. No more drive-up window, no more SUV, no more GYM, no more TCB, no more LTC, no more IRA. I could use an FDR and a WPA. So keep the home fire burning, making spirits bright. White collar dumpster divers, trash cans all alight. We used our resumes to start this fire tonight. We networked in the glow, and then we say good night.
A bone to pick with Bubble Genius. They're making voodoo dolls of me, Sarah Palin, stuffed with elephant poo paper. You real Americans, don't retreat, reload. Don't settle for a doll. Stick pins in the real thing. Now my advisor said, oh, Sarah, I don't think you mean that. So I fired him on the spot for infringing on my First Amendment rights.
Bubble Genius, bath and body stuff that's good for your body and your funny bone. Try our apple pie scented Vote soap or Eau de Wonk perfume.
Those Bubble Geniuses sound like commie pinko socialists to me. I mean, vegan soap I wash with reindeer fat like a true American.
Bubble Genius for Election Day. Check out our promotion on Facebook to get a free soap for voting.
I repudiate your statement, you cackle of rads. The lamestream media is in the pocket of big soap.
Bubble Genius for Election Day and every day, but especially for Election Day.
So, how's that soapy, sudsy thing working out for you?
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's Thursday, October 7th, 2010.
Hungarian sludge spill reaches Europe's second largest river.
Uh-oh.
Poo power in the UK.
Ew.
Possible answer in the mysterious honeybee deaths.
Really?
Global party on 10-10-10.
Cool.
Plus, the Clean Air Act. Cheaper than advertised.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why let facts get in the way of what your possibly shady, certainly undisclosed, most likely big agribusiness clients want?
You tell them, Rachel Maddow. Oh, well, there goes our sponsorship deal with big agribusiness. Who could have foreseen it? This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is sponsored by you. Yes, you, not big agribusiness. Please stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com, and help us to deliver the truth about green news on America's mainstream public airwaves. We can't do it alone. Your support is appreciated. Please stop by greennews.bradblog.com or PayPal your support to greennews@bradblog.com. Okay, Des, now that we lost the big agribusiness deal, what do you have for us today?
Well, the toxic red sludge from a breached industrial waste reservoir that killed 4 people on Monday in Hungary has now reached the Danube River, Europe's second largest waterway, according to Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban.
I think it's a serious ecological catastrophe, but we don't know what the size of it. But it's serious, big, and because of the rivers, you know, it has some effect. Tens of kilometers from here as well.
Scientists say testing shows the presence of heavy metals remains below dangerous levels to humans, but officials say all aquatic life in a tributary river has been, quote, extinguished. And the scientists also caution that the sludge is still dangerous to humans due to its caustic components.
How did these people get killed by the sludge bill if it's not toxic?
Apparently they drowned.
So this was like a wave of toxic sludge?
A 6-foot wave of toxic sludge.
Wow.
Onto a sludge of a different color, Britain has launched its first ever utility plant powered by human waste. The new small biogas pilot project in Oxfordshire treats raw sewage from 14 million Thames Water customers, converting it through the use of anaerobic digesters into a biomethane gas that's then piped directly back into their homes for heating and cooking.
You're probably waiting for me to make a comment here,
yeah, well,
but I don't have one. Poo power, eh? Well, it's certainly renewable.
There's the snarky comment you were looking for. The New York Times reports scientists may have found the culprit in colony collapse disorder, the mysterious mass die-offs of bees in the United States and Europe. Scientists in a joint research project between the U.S. Army and the University of Montana say they've discovered a new, previously unknown virus that was found in all of the collapsed colonies they studied. The new virus seems to deliver a fatal 1-2 punch when combined with an already identified toxic fungus. Fascinating story on the new research technology. You can check it out at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
And once again, why the hell should I care about the disappearance of bees?
Because they're crucial to our food supply.
Oh, that.
On the heels of the 40th birthday of the Clean Air Act last month, a new study shows that the costs of implementing the Clean Air Act were grossly overestimated. The study from the Main Street Alliance says both industry and government estimates of the cost of the Clean Air Act were overestimated by some 500 to 1,000%.
Wow.
Say that again. The Clean Air Act cost the U.S. up to 1,000 times less than original estimates.
So when we hear these industry hacks complaining about environmental legislation, frankly, complaining about any legislation, and saying, oh, you know, this legislation is always underestimated, always costs more than we think it's going to down the road.
They're wrong.
They're wrong, at least in the case of the Clean Air Act.
And in most legislation with this kind of cost projection, this typically happens because it's impossible to predict the innovation of new technologies. With the midterm elections less than a month away on Tuesday, November 2nd, we have yet another example of how this midterm election directly affects crucial oversight. The National Oil Spill Commission, which is investigating the BP oil disaster in the Gulf,
will not
be getting subpoena power to compel witnesses to produce evidence because the measure could not get enough support in the Senate to bring it up for a vote.
So once again, we have a commission here that is toothless, that can't really go after the people and the documents they need to find out what happened and who the wrongdoers actually were.
Because of a blockade in the Senate.
Unbelievable.
Finally, this Sunday is October 10th, 2010, also known as 10-10-10, a date notable for its nice numerical symmetry, but also an International Day of Action for Climate Change. The environmental group 350.org is hosting a worldwide community work party on 10-10-10. Again, that's this Sunday. Over 7,000 events are already planned around the world for action on climate change and to give back to communities. You can get more info and find an event near you by going to 350.org. That's 350.org.
For more on that and all the stories we did not get to today, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can download our broadcasts anytime at iTunes. You can listen to us on your smartphone via Stitcher. And you can follow us 24-7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's about as much REO Speedwagon as I can take. I had severe misgivings about playing it in the first place, as you may have noticed from the extended silence after the Coal River Wind ad. welcome back to the program. A few emails to go through, then we go straight to the phones. Let's see. Back up. Kate noting, didn't old Hank say, unless you ain't made no mistakes in your life, be careful of the stones you throw? That must be that New Testament stuff. I think it is. That was either Hank or Jesus. They're kind of interchangeable in my world. Jack writing from Shreveport, he says, I think the personal responsibility mantra is just the ultimate divide and conquer tactic taken by the right. They use that tactic to divide any group they find convenient, and personal responsibility is the smallest division they can find. Yeah, there's that too. Andy writing in from California says, it was hard to listen to the letter you read, blame the victim diatribe. The writer found a way to put his own jaded view of reality, really fantasy, in cookie-cutter fashion upon every situation without any knowledge of the details of the circumstances of the event. Somehow, the writer finds a way to justify the penalty or injustice society has placed on the misfortune of others. It's so simple. It's always your own fault, your responsibility. Well, it's not always our own fault. Or if it is, we have safety nets, so folks jump back into society as functional participants. In reality, much of being an ethical and sensitive human being means putting yourself in another's shoes, something impossible for this dim-witted, dead-from-the-neck-up Neanderthal. Sometimes we don't have control over the situation. How about a little compassion? The penalty for society of not providing a safety net is much worse. We lose our society. Jack also adding, contrary to the book of Job in the Bible, when shit happens to us, we don't get all our stuff back. Not unless we could afford a good health insurance policy, and they actually pay off, and have good home insurance, and they pay off, and even then we don't get our dead pets or loved ones back. Meanwhile, there was usually a person or group that profited by creating the circumstances that made the shit happen, i.e. profiting by offshoring, profiting by denying health insurance claims, etc. The shit doesn't just happen as in an act of God. Well, see, that's the thing. Act of God is entirely made up because God is entirely made up. But you'll have that, I guess. Let's see. Ron asking, can we gather all these sons of bitches and send them somewhere away from sane, decent people? This is like that 90-year-old woman who believes that we Negroes have been given everything. You know, I didn't even make the connection with the 90-year-old from Moran Monday. But yeah, it's the same mindset. Why are they all complaining? Sheesh. And for those of you who, like Kate, wanted to know who that music was that was the bumper out, that was John Kuntz. John Kuntz from his album Accessory to the Crime and Keep the Home Fires Burning. News Ninja Gene noting, I know you've moved on from the fire story for today, but it pisses me off when the libertarians preach personal responsibility. Because the guy offered to pay the fire tax when the fire started and he was denied the opportunity to practice responsibility. There's that, too. There's just no way that the wingnuts are right on this. But they're out there hollering it, and I'll guarantee you it's being hollered in some pulpits, too. Because this personal responsibility filth was... There's no better place to find it being trumpeted, bruited, and parroted about than your local pulpit. And you wonder why I don't like to go there. Jim does. Jim sent me an email saying, please explain. You have your attitude toward biblical parables and stories, and others have theirs. Please explain to me what created this hatred as being a recovering Southern Baptist. I simply do not understand it. It isn't hatred. It isn't hatred. I have about as much regard for the Bible, or anybody's holy book, as I do for Winnie the Pooh, Alice in Wonderland, My Friend Flicka, Little House in the Big Woods, that got mentioned last night. It's just a book. And in the case of the ancient holy texts, so-called, all they are the pitiable attempts of incredibly primitive, ignorant, benighted people to explain a world in which they lived and which they did not understand, could not understand, lacked the tools to understand. That's all. That's all. You know, really, Jonah got swallowed by a big fish? Really? Please. Because what I find fascinating about the idea of Jonah being swallowed by the big fish is that wasn't he told to go to Nineveh? Have you ever seen where Nineveh is? Hint, not near an ocean. Just saying. I don't hate it. I just refuse to afford it divine status because it isn't. You know, the first five books of the Bible, there's very little original in there. There's two or three different creation myths, four or five different versions of the Ten Commandments, two different elucidations on the meaning of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and then there's all that, you know, get daddy liquored up and jump his bones stuff. Whoa. And then there's Abraham. Abraham is just one long gross out from start to finish. The flood? The creation? None of that's original. It came from previous myths. Because long before we were writing, we were talking. But as soon as somebody could write it down, they wrote it down and said, this is how it is. And if you don't believe this, we're going to kill you. The Christian church, as I've said in the past, the Christian church, if you're within the sound of my voice on either the American or European continent, and quite possibly the Asian one as well, or the African continent. Wait a minute, the South American continent. Oh, shit, if you're in Antarctica, there's a pretty good chance that the Christians have killed someone in your family tree. And just because it was 500 years ago doesn't mean it's okay now. I have a very deeply seated, deeply rooted ethos and morality that does not permit me to cross paths with anything as filthy as the Christian church, or virtually any other religion this side of most of Buddhism. Religion happens in the person, not in the organization. Any faith that goes outside the individual human is inherently dangerous and probably bloodthirsty. So, no, it's not hatred. It's disdain. Angels dancing on that pin, heads of pins and stuff like that. I can't surrender my rational mind to it. Because if you believe in a God, that God gave you the rational mind. You know, in the New Testament it says, you know, have the faith of a little child. It doesn't say have the brains of one. But more than anything else, if you take your average holy man, whether he be some yogi, more about yoga later, if you take some yogi or some Jesus, and you actually scrutinize what the person is alleged to have said, you will always find a crowd of people around him trying to figure out a way to simplify it, or to make it easy, or make it mass marketable. That's why Jonathan Swift, I believe it was, a few centuries worth of change later, said, "You will always know a great man by these portents, that wherever he goes, he shall be surrounded by a confederacy of dunces." I personally think that Dean Swift learned that by reading the Gospels. Because if you read the Gospels, what you find out is the disciples are idiots. "Hey, Jesus, which one of us is going to sit at your right hand?" "Duh! Now y'all get a crown, okay? Y'all get a crown. Shut up." So that's that. But enough of that. Let's go on to the phones.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Brian.
Can you hear me?
I hear you good.
Okay, my Vonage phone system there, I want to make sure it's coming through okay. Yeah, as a teenager, I was guided by this book. It's the actual Bible, but it's Good News for Modern Man, the New Testament, today's English version.
Right.
And I go back to it from time to time. Here's the parable, from the book Mark and the book of Luke. Mark chapter 3, verse 1 to 6, and from Luke chapter 6, verse 6 to 11. Joshua, i.e. Jesus left the place and went to one of their synagogues. This is a story of the man with the crippled hand. A man was there who had a crippled hand. There were some men present who wanted to accuse Jesus of wrongdoing. So they asked him, "Is it against our law to cure on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered, "What if one of you has a sheep and it falls into a deep hole on the Sabbath? Will you not take hold of it and lift it out? And a man is worth much more than a sheep. So then our law does allow us to help someone on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." This is the crippled man with the crippled hand. He reached it out and it became well again. Just like the other one, the Pharisees left and made plans against Joshua, i.e. Jesus, to kill him. And it goes on from there. But and also, Jesus did not ask if the man had health insurance. He didn't ask if he had paid his residence fee of 75 whatever Roman drachma or whatever the term is for that year for that part of the...
Yeah, sesterces maybe.
Sesterces, okay. He didn't ask that before he healed the man. These people, civilization, part of it, that these right-wingers have been raving for years, much of our civilization is built on Christian, the Ten Commandments or the original Old Testament 25 to 30 commandments, but it's Buddhism, the Confucianism, Shintoism, the animism of Africa, the people that are the yoke, the Boji people, or it's his name, people in West Africa who have, they mapped out the star system that our greatest astrophysicists and radio telescopes and telescopic science did not map out until nearly the year 2000. They mapped out the...
Yeah, the Mayans did something similar.
Yeah. Okay, and all these religious and spiritual traditions that they guide us to the things that, you like Jesus said, you help the least among us, the weakest among us, people that are really hurting, you help them and you're helping me. Otherwise, if you turn your back on them, you're going towards that Lucifer direction, and these Republicans have been saying moral and responsibility, but especially morals for years based on Christian and spiritual ethics, especially Christian ethics in this country, and yet they won't live up to that when it comes time to deliver the homeless, the ever-increasing homeless. You know, right here in Manchester, New Hampshire, people think it coming up in New Hampshire or New England that it's a basic, that it's more of a bright light in the national economy. It's not. An increasing number of homeless that even the Manchester Union hater, I call them that, the Manchester Union Leader is the official name of their newspaper, but their policies are, Reagan and George W. The rest of their anti-union hatred is for the working class and for the average American is venal. But the fact is that there are increasing numbers of homeless in Manchester, all over this country. The fact is that, to really reach out to these people is to do what Christ wants us to do. The Christ like is in the traditional thing of Buddhism, any human tradition of spiritualism and evolution, not revolution. People like revolution, these Tea Partiers, like I said, like these bloody war-loving people in this post-nuclear, post-weapons of mass destruction age, they still love war. They love to talk about threatening people, and then, if they sucker them into any kind of a shoving incident or throwing a fisticuff at them, they'll run to the local police. You know, these are revolutionaries who want to slavishly reappoint George W. Bush back to his Mad King George status. Once again, that's what these Tea Partiers of today are, while the Boston Tea Partiers against, like the Founding Fathers, hated corporations, basically. Abraham Lincoln feared that, as we alluded to last night about at the end of the Civil War. But talk about the responsibility these right-wingers talk about. Okay, let's talk about that. How about, first begin with the working man, the people that really build this nation, that continue to build the fortunes of these CEOs, whether they work in McDonald's or they work at this Mott's Apple plant in Western New York, Williamson, New York. The fact is, the Mott's, the strike there, they basically won a basic empiric victory, or perhaps a victory that kept their wages in place. The new employees could be guaranteed those wages. But the fact is, the meritocracy, the free market, the libertarian, almighty, the new Jesus, the free market, by that standard, 2009, $155 million in profit cleared for Mott's apple juice plant in upstate New York, and Dr. Pepper Snapple, its parent company. And the workers made it happen. They made that possible. And yet they talk about a Michelle Muio. She talks about she makes $19 an hour as a machine operator in the Mott's plant. She worked at the plant for 15 years. And they talk, all these people like her, like Michelle, they built this profit, and yet the Mott's management and their lawyers, insurance, whatever people there, they go to the union and say, well, all the prevailing wage in this area, every other worker there, they're making barely like 13.
Yeah, one of the most hateful arguments I've recently heard made, Brian, without a doubt. Hey Brian, your phone mic or whatever is kind of overdriving a little bit. And okay. it's making you break up. I don't know.
I have plenty of airtime this week anyway. It's been great to hear you, Bob. I'll go back to listening to your other great callers.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Brian, thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's Brian in New Hampshire. And I hate it when technical stuff invades on good conversation. Truly, I do. Hey. Okay.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I wanted to say something about the gentleman that his house burned down.
Sure.
I was watching Oberman last night.
Mm-hmm.
And he had him on again. And, they've offered him help. And every time they've said, he said, well, let me see what my insurance company will do. And so last night he offered him help again, and he said, there's a lot of people wants to help you. And he said, well, he said, the insurance companies already gave me some money. And he said, they say they'll cover everything. He said, I don't know. He said, let me still think about it. And I thought, isn't he an honorable man? Because Shoot, I think if it was me,
you'd say, write the check.
Yeah.
Give me one of them big old, give me one of them big old golf tournament checks. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is, speaks of him as an honorable man. And, you know, his son was in the...
Well, there's probably about nine generations of his family that have it all the way clean to the bone that you don't accept charity.
That's very possible. I came from that background.
So did I.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just a work thing, work ethic, right or wrong, you know. But, yeah, I thought, well, this is a very honorable man because he could have people there now, you know, from all over the country. He could have money going in, and I'm sure somewhere some of them will go in. But I was thinking, what a difference between a lot of other people. And I'm not, you know, his judge or anything, but to me, I admire him. Because he said, you know, he might not need the help. And I just think that's special.
And maybe take that possible help if he doesn't need it and turn it to somebody who does. Because you know what, Juanita? Somebody always does.
Oh, definitely, for sure. But, you know, even his own neighbor offered his checkbook, an open checkbook to those people. Anyway, the man's son was at a press conference with, I guess it was the fire chief, and the fire chief was saying, well, they did the right thing, you know, according to their laws. And he said, well, didn't my dad offer to pay them on the spot? Didn't he open up his checkbook and offer? And he said, yes, he did. And he didn't argue about it. And then he said,
see, that the fire chief is the villain in this. The fire chief is the one who stopped the men on the fire truck from doing what they morally knew they should do.
Well, he was out playing golf too, telling them. But you know that.
Well, I mean, he shows up in the, you know, when you watch the video, the fire chief is eventually in the video. He's the one who calls the county sheriff on the TV news team.
Yeah.
And, well, and you know, personally, I think that, and I know it, that, hey, look, you know, this right-winger that wrote to me, he's all into rough justice. I think that fire chief needs to be run out of town on a rail wearing tar and feathers.
Well, this,
but I mean that way, Juanita, and I admit.
You're a mean, mean man.
Mean liberal.
Mean, mean Bob. Well, we're all going to get mean before it's over if something doesn't happen, I'm telling you. But, anyway, I didn't call you about what you were reading about or anything, but I'll just say this about the Bible. And Jesus said that those who are whole have no need of a physician. And see, I wasn't whole, and I needed the physician, and he kept me going. He kept me alive, or he kept me being locked away somewhere and a blithering idiot. I mean, I'm serious. And for people like me, we need him. And I'm not saying, you know, the truth, I don't worry about all the Bible because I don't worry about what kind of baptism or whatever, but I've mainly have learned to trust in Jesus and what
you attend to your own salvation.
Yeah, work out your own salvation. Yeah.
But, you know, Juanita, it's important, and this is an appropriate point at which to mention it. While you're working out your own salvation, the head of the Southern Baptist Convention just wants to make sure that you're not working out your own salvation by working out doing yoga.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I've been knowing that. And also the charismatic, this evil, you know, says it's evil.
Yeah, see, I saw this story broke today, and a lot of people are having a good yuck over it. I don't know if you saw it or not.
No.
The Southern Baptist Seminary president Albert Moeller says that yoga is, well, probably demonic. He says the idea that the body is a vehicle for reaching consciousness with the divine. He says I object to that. That's just not Christianity.
We don't know that.
Well, Albert Moeller does.
I know, but you know, there's so many things.
Pat Robertson said yoga is creepy.
Oh, yeah. Well, he just recently got an award from the Israelis for his work for the Jews.
Oh, gracious sake. That must mean that Jesus Land is back in the building phase.
Well, this has been going on when I was watching him.
Oh, I know, but don't you remember back when he said that Shimon? I forget the big fat war criminal that had a stroke that was the head man in Israel.
He's still living, isn't he?
I don't know if he is. He may be very similar to one of those rutabagas I was talking about.
Sham or Shazam, not Shazam.
I can't remember.
Excuse me, I don't mean to be rude.
No, I understand. I can't remember his name either. But way back when that stroke hit him, Pat Robertson said that was God's justice upon him. And the Israeli government said, ho, what was it now?
What was he against him for? He was a warrior.
Well, I don't know, but Pat Robertson said that was God's justice upon him, Juanita. And the Israeli government said, that's it. You ain't building your Jesus land next to the Sea of Galilee. You're not going to build your Disneyland of Jesus. And Pat Robertson said, I'm sorry. And they said, okay, build your Disneyland of Jesus on the Sea of Galilee then.
Oh, that's what he wanted to do, right?
Yeah, I suppose the plans are still underway. I mean, you know, he's out there, you know, he's, as Peter Godbold told us years ago, you know, he was out there hustling Sea of Galilee mud mask.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. There's a lot of stuff he's hustled. Hello, what?
Oh, Sharon. Yeah, Sharon.
Yeah, Sharon. I was close.
Yeah, my Sharona. Right.
But anyway, I'm just, you know, because I speak for myself. I mean, I know rational mind, Bob, is in the eye of the beholder. You know, there's a lot of things we don't know yet. Dr. Kuzu, is that his name, Akunu?
I'm not sure.
He's a Japanese physicist. And I saw him on C-SPAN this weekend, and I was really fascinated with him because he says, you know, like now the things that are impossible, we say could happen in 100 years. A lot of those we said that about a few years ago are happening now. In other words, it's a constant change of what's possible. And I do believe that all things are possible. We don't use all of our mind, you know.
But there are some things that just aren't going to happen.
Well.
Parthenogenesis being one of them.
That is.
That's virgin human girls giving birth to little babies.
I believe that.
I understand that.
I'm
but
sorry,
you, that's
but
that's okay. Don't apologize
don't
for it.
I don't mean to offend you.
No, you're not offending me. You're not offending me in the least. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen in human populations.
Told me, I believe it. And there's a complicated situation with.
Well, what's interesting, you know, what's interesting is that Paul of Tarsus, Saul of Tarsus, didn't believe in it either. You know, St. Paul, no.
He didn't believe that Jesus was born of a virgin.
Absolutely not.
Well, I didn't know that. Where is that?
You can read every letter that's in the New Testament allegedly authored.
Believe I've read the
every letter allegedly every letter every book allegedly authored by Paul. And what's important to remember is that Paul's letters actually predate Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, the Gospels. Paul's letters are older than the Gospels, and you would think that something extraordinary like being born of a virgin would have made an impression.
My TV just came on. My cat came up here and stepped on my.
No, that was me. I'm on your TV?
Well, not TV, the internet.
Oh, okay.
One of my cats got up here and changed it.
You know, cats are like that.
Turn it back on.
Cats are like that, Juanita. But no, Paul's letters are older than the Gospels in their creation. And all I was saying is that you would think that a little baby being born of a virgin, you know, a story like that gets around.
Yeah.
And yet it never shows up in any of Paul's writings. Not a word. Not a word.
Well, but you said he didn't believe in it, so
right, and
he just didn't write about it, right?
Well, yeah, and I would say that means he probably didn't.
I believe you
Or maybe that part of the story hadn't been made up yet.
But anyway, it would take too long for me to even talk about it.
I understand. And you know what? I don't hold it against anybody what they want to believe.
What you want to believe.
Right, but there's, yeah. but the difference
but
here,
just,
the difference here, Juanita.
The subject was brought up.
Yeah, the difference here, Juanita, is belief versus knowledge. I know biologically that human virgins, don't have babies. Now you can believe that they do, but that's, and I'm not being mean about anything.
That is
radically different from believing. Knowing is something that happens in the brain. Believing is something that happens in the heart.
Well, I know that he's changed my life. I know that.
Absolutely. And many people's lives.
I needed him. See,
but
guidepost, you know.
Yeah, what's important to note, though, is that change took place in you. Mm-hmm. You know, you've talked.
I looked at other beliefs and all, and I don't celebrate Christmas. Because I don't have any small children, and I don't believe it's a Christian holiday. You know, it's not. So I don't celebrate those things.
Right, and see that's.
That was through a long series of events.
Right, and you have told us as well of the time that you spent in the fundamentalist religion industry,
what a horror that was. Yeah, I tried it, and. I thought they were right, and I hadn't evolved to where I've evolved now. And, you know, someday I may agree with you what you said about the virgin birth, but I've evolved, you know, from where I was then when I thought other people knew, and I didn't, and I thought they were right, and I tried to live up to that, and one day I said, okay, God, I'm just going to be me. It just was against me, you know, them wanting you to be a Republican and all that kind of stuff. And I said, you know, if I'm right or if I'm wrong. But it turned out, I think I'm right. I think I was right to be myself. Because it's like Roseanne Barr said, God don't like a brown noser. And where she based that, she said that when she was a little kid, they lived across the highway to go to a store, and her mother sent her to the store. You know, I'm talking about Roseanne Barr, the
yes.
comedian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Her mother sent her to the store. When she came back, they had given her too much money. And her mother said, oh, you got to go back and give them their money. Well, she's going back across the road, and she runs, and she gets run into, and she's in the hospital for a long time. She spent a long, long time when she was a kid in the hospital with brain injury. And she said she found out, see, even God doesn't like a brown noser. You're trying to do what's right. And God don't necessarily want us to do what's right, because we don't really know most of the time what's right. This guy that wrote you, he thinks he's right.
Oh, he doesn't think it.
He thinks he's right.
Yeah, what's even more dangerous, he believes he's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When a person thinks that they're... And I've kind of been close to that in some cases. But I'm learning, and I'm hoping I'm evolving every day. That's the evolution of my soul, you know.
Yeah.
But,
Well, again, you know, you can go to the book, and it says have the faith of a little child. Like I said, it doesn't say have the brains of one.
It's different than being childish. That's a whole lot of difference between... You know,
but try to explain that to a fundamentalist. It's like that. It's like that yoga story. That yoga story I mentioned.
And Bob, you know, when I'm talking, I love you. You know,
I know, and we love you too. Absolutely. But like that yoga story I was telling you. You said I know that, and I said I know that because I heard.
I've been hearing it for years.
I heard that when I was a little bitty Baptist.
Well,
that doing yoga was demonic. I did.
Well, the thing is, I was going to say, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Is what I was going to comment about that. The thing she, when radio first came out, the Christians, oh, this is of the devil. Then when the movies came out, this is of the devil. I know people who wouldn't go to a movie unless it was a so-called biblical movie. Then when they got their TVs, they watched the same daggum movies that I had watched in the movies.
Lo and behold. You know? Sure.
But and then they rejected it, and then they accepted. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of things that they thought was wrong, and they accepted it. It's been a change, and they don't realize it. They have no idea the things that they've accepted and all. I can go to church right now, and I can see it, you know, some of the things I think.
Your cat needs to be on YouTube, Juanita.
Well, I got one on the YouTube. She's nursing. She's my little wet nurse.
Aww.
But, anyway, you got the article about the cats, right?
Yes.
Okay, would you mind reading that part for Jim?
Well, why don't you just say it instead?
Huh?
Why don't you just say it instead?
Why don't I say it? I'll have to look and see.
Well, see, I got to do it, too.
I got to. Oh, okay. Just a second.
Well, while you're looking, what I was going to tell you about this yoga story. No, really, I've heard that, yoga was lumped in with reading the horoscopes. It was lumped in with playing with a Ouija board.
Yeah.
Going to palm readers, tarot cards. That was all just a slicky slide straight to the devil. Yoga included, but what blows my mind, I didn't know this, but you know how I've argued from time to time, Juanita, that, if the fundamentalist Christians ever figure out how much they have in common with the fundamentalist Muslims, we're all in trouble.
They don't. They can't. They just can't see it.
But if they sit down and wait, you don't like gambling? We don't like gambling. You don't like drinking? We don't like drinking. You don't like your women getting all uppity? We don't like our women getting all uppity. Then we got trouble. Well, lo and behold, in this Associated Press article about Southern Baptist Seminary President Albert Moeller saying that the stretching out and getting limber is somehow demonic, there's this little passage that says, Muslim clerics have banned Muslims from practicing yoga in Egypt, Malaysia, and Indonesia, also citing concerns that it's not Muslim to stretch and get limber.
Well, any kind of fundamentalism, you know, they've all got a lot in common.
And that's the whole point. It's not the religion, it's the fundamentalism approach to the religion.
Well, you were talking about Franklin Graham, and I was going to watch that show, and I forgot about it. They had it on C-SPAN.
Right.
But anyway, his arguments about the evils of that religion, they're so pathetic because it runs in the his kind of religion too, you know. He said, "Well, you know, we're gonna have all these mosques over here, and they won't let us build any churches over there." But
didn't we have our time when we built churches over there? Wasn't there this little thing called the Crusade?
Well, according to the Crouches, they built a bunch over in Iraq too. They're saving people left and right, according to, you know, my ex right wing friend. I haven't talked to her in a while, but she kept, "Oh yeah, they're doing this and that and the other over there," and I said, "Oh, please. They're building churches and they're building schools and the Iraqis are really living it up from all that was done for them." But anyway. But I think his reasoning powers are very limited. Talk about being rational.
Yes, that goes almost without saying.
I found this, and I'll read it, and I'll shut up.
Okay. You don't have to shut up.
I said, "Jim called me a fella aerophile. Sorry to say I didn't know what it meant." I looked it up, and this is what I found. Thanks, Jim. And it's a long article about cats are good for your health, and there was two quotes by Mark Twain and one by Mark Twain and one by Ernest Hemingway. And it said, It was Mark Twain that said, I simply cannot resist a cat, particularly a purring one. They're the cleanest, cunningest, and most intelligent things I know outside of the girl you love, of course. In concurrence with Ernest Hemingway's quote, one cat just leads to another. Boy, that's true. Dr. Gamea says, cats are like potato chips. People just can't have one. If the benefits of owning a cat really are life-saving, reach for the value pack. But it's a long thing about, you know, how their purr, you know, sometimes will heal people. And I've got an article somewhere about a cat who kept this person hiding from the and protected from the Germans. They were hiding out in a barn, and there were rats, and the cat would get the rats and also sleep on them and keep them warm, you know.
Yeah.
Animals are wonderful.
Well, I was watching a documentary about Sam Clemens, Mark Twain, not too long ago, and there's a wonderful photo of him, photo taken of him. He's sitting in a rocker. And this you know, tortoiseshell tabby cat is just sitting on his lap as happy as could be, and he looked about as happy as any photograph I've ever seen of him.
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard him say anything or read that about what he said about cats.
I have read it. Oh, he was a cat person.
Yeah. Well, I like dogs, too. I like them both.
Right. Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, who doesn't like a puppy?
Because but where I live, not the cats don't get run over, but dogs, you don't keep them very long. And
that's just sad to even contemplate.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say something, too, about light bills.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a shock this month. Mine went up like $52.
Well, that's that cheap coal-fired electricity for you, Juanita.
And they claim that they're going to give us a refund of $19.
Well, don't spend it all in one place, for heaven's sake.
I tell you, I mean, it's always been bad, but it's just getting worse, Bob. It really is.
It is. Yeah, Agnes and I counted it up. Since 2006, our cheap coal-fired electricity has gone up 100%.
There you go.
I can't wait until this winter because, you know, our heating system here in the mansion...
Yeah.
Is worn out and blown up, and the only part of it, it's an old heat pump, and the only part left that works is the toaster coil. So when it gets brutal cold outside, we're basically heating the house on a toaster, and you can go out to the electric meter, and that thing spins like a carnival pinwheel.
Like everything.
Yeah.
But it's just unbelievable, and I don't hardly have any appliances. I had like two room air conditioners. And refrigerator, and once in a while I use
the stove, or
I use the internet up to, you know, whatever. But all of a sudden, my God, you know, and I said, Lord, have mercy.
Well, see, if you were more personally responsible,
yeah,
like our correspondent wrote, you wouldn't have that high power bill.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know that. I tried to live that what'd you call it?
Personal responsibility?
You know, wealthy. You're supposed to be wealthy.
Oh, prosperity gospel.
If you give your children a lot of money, then you're not a good parent.
Right.
I have to send you that book sometime if I can find it.
Oh, mercy. I don't know if I could take it, Juanita.
To throw away, but, yeah, actually saying that if you don't have... But there's other things that are valuable to leave your children. You know,
that's interesting you would say that because this probably says something about me, but you know how I feel about family history and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And knowing where you come from. But as I sat there and watched the video of Mr. Kranich's house, in its smoking rubble, and I saw that fire chief who said, well, we just couldn't put it out. He didn't put, you know, no ticky, no shirty.
I can't understand him sitting there and watching.
Well, I can't either. And I think that the fire crew sat there and watched it because they were paid firemen and they were afraid they'd lose their jobs.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to lose their job this day and age.
That's true.
It's bad enough to lose it in a good economy and have to go looking for another one. To be in South Fulton, Tennessee, and lose your job Well, there ain't going to be another job.
Right.
But anyway, as I sat there looking at the video and looking at the smoke and rubble, I started to think about, well, we've got photographs around here that are irreplaceable, Juanita.
Oh, yeah.
And they go back over 100 years.
Yeah.
They go back maybe 130 years, 150 years. I was sitting there looking at Mr. Kranich's ruins, and I thought, my God, that, you know, because of fire, you lose everything.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm the type of person that if something like that happened to me, you know, I would want my photographs above all to be saved. I mean, aside from human life, I don't, and my animals, but I'm talking about as far as physical things, that would be my main thing.
Yeah.
That I would want.
The photos.
Yeah.
Well, see, you and I do think far too much alike. Juanita, it's been a wonderful conversation, and you've got a talented cat.
Yeah. Well, it's more than one.
Oh, there's two that turn the TV on and off?
That turned you on. They said, we want to hear it too.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is validation of Mr. Clemens's high estimation
right.
of cats.
Actually, isn't that funny that they turned you on both times?
Well, you only have to worry if they start turning on O'Reilly.
Oh, there's the thought.
Or Beck.
Oh, God. Gag me with a spoon.
I know. Juanita, have a wonderful night.
You too.
Bye now.
Night-night.
Oh, wow, this night is flying past us.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
I got a couple things to say real quick, but...
Okay, say them both.
Can I be rather offensive?
Well, as need be.
You mentioned Phyllis Schlafly.
I can't say her name either. Yes.
And the very first thing I thought of when I heard that name was, damn, if somebody had to be gunned down, why couldn't it have been her instead of Harvey Milk?
Well, there's that.
That's not a threat to anybody. I'm just saying I'm regretting the way fate worked out.
Amen.
Now, yes. As to your email, talk about a self-righteous little prig.
Oh, I know. Isn't it just stunning?
I haven't wanted to slap anybody upside the head spad in a long time.
They really do just bring out the worst in us, don't they? I mean, I read this thing when it came in with my mouth hanging open. Because, first of all, I don't get that many right-wing emails.
Yeah.
And secondly, last night was a pretty weird night as it was, and just to close it up by opening that, because I thought it was somebody entirely different, and I went, wait a minute. And then I saw, this is my first time listening to you, and well, this will be the last time listening.
Thank God it wasn't that, Richard. Yeah. It's hard to imagine anybody that can believe that, but they do occur, and unfortunately they are in this country. My sole consolation, I guess you could call it, is karma.
Well, that's demonic just like yoga.
Yeah, it's going to turn around and like him, but good.
But you know what? That book for which I have no more reverence than I have for Winnie the Pooh or My Friend Flicka or The Hardy Boys and The Lost Tower, it says that you'll have that kind, and when something awful happens to them, that they're the first ones to run a hollering, Lord, Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, none of this stoic suffering like Job did. No, they're whining like at the top of their lungs.
Yeah, they're exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. Here's the main reason I'm calling it.
Okie doke.
Okay. Consider. Citizens United comes in at the behest of the rats.
Right. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia.
Right. Okay. Now, that means a company can form a an entity.
Okay.
A corporate entity. And funnel money into it. And that corporate entity can shovel cash, you know, completely without any, no way anybody can trace it, into whoever they want. Now, how much do you want to bet this has already been noticed and acted upon by certain organizations that in earlier times were called La Cosa Nostra?
Well, there is that, isn't there?
Presently called the drug cartels. Sooner or later, some senator or congressman who has a bill up for a vote, and his vote is crucial, is going to get a visit. And here will be copies, indisputable proof that his election was paid for, bought and paid for, by these organizations. Hey, bud, vote the way we want you to, or we make it public.
I see no problem with that.
The law of unintended consequences just... Yeah. Do you think the rats bothered to think of that, or did they even care?
Not so much. You know, that's like this business, and what you're talking about, you know, the A in rats is Alito. And you remember when, in his State of the Union address, President Not Sure said that the Citizens United decision was wrong and it did bad things to our political system and it opened the floodgates for foreign monies to come into our politics, and sitting there in his little black robe, Sammy Alito said, he mouthed the words, "Not true." Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out it was.
Yeah. Now, here's another scenario that I'm sure they thought of, and I'm sure that they don't really give a rip. Said organization buying senators right and left could be, let me see. Ooh. How about the People's Republic of Iran?
Yeah, why not?
What's to stop it?
Nothing. That's the point. Nothing. How about Hugo Chavez?
Yeah. And Hugo Chavez is well known for buying elections. And what about China? China owns all our debt. China wants to make sure that they get paid. What better way than to own our government? They don't need to take us over. They just need
funny,
to
buy. Funny, you know, isn't it funny? Isn't it funny, Susan, how these right-wingers, they love to talk about the original intent of the Constitution. They love that, right? And yet, they can't quite get around to reading George Washington's farewell address. You know, the one where he said, avoid foreign entanglements.
Yeah, right. And, you know, they're so big on national security. What's to stop somebody from owning a senator or three on the Foreign Relations Committee?
If you'll forgive my recourse again to ancient history, it was nothing in the ancient Roman Republic, and it's part of why the ancient Roman Republic crumbled, that foreign potentates would periodically send an embassage to Rome carrying big bags of gold, and they would spread it around amongst the senators.
Exactly. Haven't any of these idiots ever picked up a history book, or did they just stick to...
No, that's the thing. Like our correspondent around whom this show is apparently centering, they think that they're smarter than all those old ancient people. They'll get it right this time. They can be corrupt nicely. They can be corrupt and not get caught. They can be corrupt, and as long as they're repped all tight in the flag, and they're saying the Pledge of Allegiance and thumping on that Bible, well, they'll be doing good.
Nazism will come to this country wrapped in a flag.
And carrying a cross. You know, as David in Tennessee notes, why stop at owning three senators? Big oil hasn't. You know, that's the whole point. We got enough problems with domestic corporations. Yeah, last thing we need is a daggum bidding war. Oh, and by the way, in case it's not going to make you feel any better, but tomorrow, Susan, the United States Chamber of Commerce has a little reception planned. And at that reception will be the Bahrain Financial Harbor Holding Company, the ICICI Bank of India, the Taib Bank of Bahrain, and the State Bank of India. Remember March Mango Madness? When we were trading nukes for mangoes? Well, this is the payback, I guess.
And has it ever occurred to these idiots, when you're talking about little goodies like Bahrain and countries like that? Stupid, these are the people that financed those yahoos that flew the planes into those buildings in New York. Ding-a-lings.
Well, let's not tell them. By all means.
Because
they're worked up about an old Burlington coat factory outlet three blocks from Ground Zero. Why ruin their fun?
You know, why should they be worked up about it? They're owned by the stupid Taliban. Because let's face it, Afghanistan doesn't need to resist. They just need to get all of our soldiers addicted and then take all of that heroin money and turn around and buy the U.S. Congress. Because as Rachel Maddow put it so ever so succinctly, this is the world's best money laundering scheme ever invented.
Truly it is.
And it's utterly legal.
She is not one of the smartest people on television for nothing.
Yeah, it's utterly legal. The rats put it in our Constitution.
And I got a feeling it isn't going to get fixed. Susan, I got a feeling it isn't going to get fixed for a long, long time.
Short of armed revolution, I don't think it is either, and it scares the crap out of me.
You know, if you watch Idiocracy, you know, you hear that brought to you by Carl's Jr. No. Brought to you by the Sultan's Bank of Brunei is more like it. You know what I want to do? You know what I want to do? And maybe somebody else came up with this idea. But you've seen NASCAR drivers get out of their cars, right?
Yeah.
And their uniforms are nothing but patches for their corporate sponsors.
Every
member of Congress should wear a uniform like that.
And every Supreme Court justice.
Sure, why not? But wouldn't it be a lot easier to tell why a senator was saying something if, say, good old mush-mouth Jefferson Beauregard Sessions LaFood was to get up and you saw the BP patch on his chest and you saw the U.S. Chamber of Commerce patch on his shoulder? Wouldn't that just make things a little bit easier?
Yeah, a lot easier. It's not just the drug cartels. Here's another term for you that will just make your heart go pity-pat. The Russian mob. These are the people that outwitted the KGB.
Hey, they own coal mines in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, who do you think John Racey and Joe Manchin are bowing and scraping to? That's why it's so daggum embarrassing.
Hey, don't feel bad.
And I saw your note earlier saying that Manchin's going to be on what?
Hardball tomorrow.
Oh, for pity's sake. Talking
gag.
About what a good Democrat he is.
Yeah, gag. Barf.
I know. Hey, Susan, have a wonderful evening, dear. Did I hear Donald in the background?
No.
Oh, darn.
He is, He did get transferred back to rehab today.
Well, you tell him we're thinking awful good thoughts for him.
Thank you. And how did you like my food porn?
Oh, the food porn was wonderful. I can't wait to try it.
And most of them are low fat.
See, don't tell me that. That'll just ruin it for me.
Hey, low fat, severely high taste. There's nothing better than tomatoes. I just wish we would have had a summer so we could have gotten some.
Yeah, isn't it funny? I'm talking to you in Oregon. You didn't have a summer. I'm here in West Virginia. I didn't have a summer. I haven't talked to anybody who had a good garden. Oh, well.
No, we didn't have a summer. We
had not that there's climate change or anything.
No, no climate change at all.
Yeah, next thing you know, we'll be doing our planting in January. Susan, have a wonderful evening, dear.
Love to Agnes and Berg.
All right, thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and we go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so that was interesting that, I mean, I don't know what sort of pressure came down, but I hate to say that I was surprised that he acted on that so quickly.
I was surprised too, but at least the robo notary thing ain't going to be law.
Well, no, because you know when I sent that to you this morning, I was like, oh shit, this is not good, especially in light of how we've been pounding this issue. That's why I was sort of taken aback. I'm like, this bill's been in the House since 2007, and then it just shows up now.
Yeah, and no way of knowing who was for it nor against it. That's what bugs the heck out of me.
And not to mention, how quickly they were able to get something through. That's another thing. It's like Patrick Leahy was involved, and it's just sort of, what did they think? That it would just, no one would know? Was that the plan? Because anytime the banks need anything, something just appears.
Well, and see, Sandra, that's the point. This whole case of this whole notary bill is proof to me that maybe some of what we witness in Congress is kabuki. Because when the Democrats and the Republicans decide to work together, by God, they can. And they can do it real quiet-like. I mean, you can almost hear McConnell and Reid talking together. Don't say anything about it. Okay, I won't if you won't. Okay, let's don't. Let's get it passed. Everybody in favor. Hell yeah. And it's on the president's desk.
Right. No, that's what I mean. I agree with you. It's just so shady. And, you know, I mean, it was that was just, as soon as I sent that to you, I mean, within a few hours, it was just everywhere, too. I noticed that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the alternative to the scenario that I just described is that actually what it boils down to is the Democrats are clueless and the Republicans got one over on them. It's either they were working together or the Democrats are clueless. Neither of which outcome is particularly satisfying to me.
Oh, no, it's really disturbing. But it also just shows the sort of, I mean, just how deeply in trouble this system is, where that interest is dealt with instantly. You know, they see down the pike, because this is really bad news for the banks. You know, because if they can't recoup their, you know, whatever, if they can't do what they're doing now, you know, they risk losing huge amounts and can't have that, you know what I mean? So I don't know if this is a temporary situation or what, but people are just a bit outraged. That's why I think Obama had to, you know, respond.
Once in a while they look up and go, you know, if we let this one through... We got enough problems.
Right, no, I just...
And you know what? Maybe Rahm wasn't there to say, hey, can't we do one last nice thing for the banks before the election?
Well, I think it's the first thing you said. I just think that the piling on, you know, you gotta, if you're gonna have the foot on the neck, you gotta let up a little bit. I mean, I'm not buying none of this as a turning point. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that foolish, but I'll take it where I can. And, this one is a good one, because the whole idea that they would just allow digitalize is what was killing me about that. You know, it was crazy what they were proposing.
Yeah, because, well, basically it would have said that that all notary functions were pro forma at best.
Exactly, and if you can, like, use digitalized ones, it's like, excuse me, notarization requires witnesses. How do you witness shit on the Internet?
Right, because the whole purpose of going to a notary is that somebody watches you either sign your name or acknowledge the signature you've placed upon it.
Right, so I mean, anyway, I mean, it's sort of mute for the minute, and I'm just glad that it played out this way today, and I'm quite happy about it. But you know what? Did you hear, what is up with Andy Stern? You know that fool is on the Cat Food Commission, right?
Yeah, I know he is. What now?
Now it turns out that he's on the board of this equity. I mean, this is a private equity firm. This is the enemy, the mortal enemy of unions. And this son of a bitch has migrated to one.
I'll be darned.
And it's just like, you know what? I thought your ass was hellish.
Well, he was never one that inspired a great deal of trust in me.
No, but the thing is, he was appointed by Obama to represent workers. This is the idea. So the fact that he's also on this Perlman's equity, you know, it's just like, are you kidding me with this? Anyway, I just was taken aback. Maybe I shouldn't be, because I know he's advocating 15% of the Social Security to be put on Wall Street, so why should I be surprised?
That's the most sickening part of it all.
No, it's incredible. No, it's just...
Well, I'm sorry, but Andy Stern reminds me of the kind of union leader that they've got in China.
Well, exactly. No. It's the kind that Mussolini would like. No, we're on the same page with that one, you know, because we know the type of unions that are not very nice. That's what he, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, China... Mussolini, those sort of roles. They're no different than the corporations that are also protected by the government, really.
That's about the size of it. And, you know, this is not in any way to disparage SEIU.
I'm not talking about the union. I'm just talking about him and his.
Right. And yeah. But, you know, there was something out there to kind of be learned when he showed everybody that he was willing to shatter the AFL-CIO.
Oh, I know. No. That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's when he kind of popped up on my radar. I'm like, oh, what is this fool doing? And then from then on, I was like, oh, okay.
Because John Sweeney, who was the president of the AFL-CIO before Rich Trumka is, mm-hmm. John Sweeney had been Andy Stern's mentor. And Andy Stern figured out that Andy Stern was not going to be following John Sweeney, and he said, well, I'm going to take my toys and go home. And he created that Change to Win outfit under the guise of saying, well, you know, the AFL-CIO isn't politicking right.
Yeah. Well,
and he took a lot of serious union pull with him. I mean, he took the Teamsters with him. I think he took the United Food and Commercial Workers. I think he took the carpenters, SEIU.
It definitely undermined what little is left. That's the thing. That's why his whole legacy is well suspect, and now that he's on this Cat Food Commission, you know, his true colors are revealed, especially if he's in lockstep with, you know, hedge funds, equity. You know, that's like, that is so disgusting. I'm just like, are you kidding me with that? But... listen, I'll keep it short, but I need to touch base on the Randy Moss. What's up with that?
Oh, wait. Randy's in the news?
Randy Moss, his ass, I'm still trying to get over that he was traded back to Minnesota.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you don't know that one?
No, I missed that.
Dude, yes. He sure is for a third round pick. So he must have been having issues and
but he was behaving so nicely in New England.
Whatever, I guess not nice enough because old Hoodie got rid of his ass. But that's all kinds of weapons for Favre, ain't it?
Oh, you got to get a little excited about that.
I'm really excited because they're playing the Jets too on Monday. I think, you know, that's gonna be. I'm gonna have to make time. I don't have no time for football. It's hideous. But I got to see that game.
But you know what? Randy's getting older.
Yeah, I know, but... Oh, no, I know. I'm sure...
And the Patriots have not been having the best of times.
Oh, no. I'm sure it was just one of the moves, but I was just kind of surprised. I mean, that was where he started his career. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Culpepper or whoever, right?
Yeah, and I mean, anything there was for those first couple of years, anything that was in the same area, anything that was thrown in the same area code with him, he'd bring it down.
That's what I'm saying. No, he was crazy when he was young. But anyway, I just think that, you know, with all the different people, Favre, you know, shit, if they can get it together, that's going to be a real strong, I don't know, we'll see. I know Favre's been having problems going forward. I don't know if he's sending his dick anywhere. Maybe you might want to check that for a bit.
I don't know.
You know I'm a fan of Favre. I like Favre. I think, shit, if you can play that well, why the hell should you stop?
You know, play till you drop, because he's not the kind of guy that has the skill set to have an active to have a really active and satisfying life after football.
Well, yeah,
it's not like he's going to go become a biochemist or invent something at MIT.
Well, yeah, I mean, he might want to. Yeah, if he's sending his stuff around, that ain't. I don't know too well, but. I just can't
imagine being the person who opened that text message.
No, that poor chick. I know she was like, what the? But, you know, another thing about the football that's killing me is the Steelers. They seem to be playing pretty well without the sex predator.
You know what's sad, though? As soon as his suspension is up, he's going to come back, and all of that is going to go to hell.
I understand, but I mean, oh yeah, I mean, how, it depends on how he's playing, though, right?
Yeah, but how well can you be playing when you're six games into the season, and you're coming in rusty?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I guess they're gonna have to let him play. I mean, they're paying the man too much, but I just think it's kind of interesting that the team was able to go on, and that's what all these. Players don't seem to realize that these organizations will continue.
Well, and the labor business remains sort of a simmering undercurrent, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, no, that's and in fact, to me, it's just making the owners look worse and worse. It's like, hello, why are you going to destroy the egg that lays, you know, the golden egg? I mean, this is one of the most profitable sporting businesses in the history of the world. And these greedy people are so greedy that they're risking messing up their little thing. And also, the 18 games is hell. What are you going to have, third-string quarterbacks at playoff time?
Well, pretty much. I mean,
no, seriously. It's like, I think it's such a ridiculous possibility. The way that people getting hurt left and right this year, although I would be, if I was a player, I'd be like making them hurt show up more. Just to let them people know what time it is. I don't know if they're doing that, but there's been a lot of injuries this year.
Well, I wonder if that's a function of the so-called greater attention being paid to it.
Well,
if maybe they're pulling people off the active list a little bit more quickly.
Well, because of all the bad PR they're getting from post-playing days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I can.
You know, Ivy League football players hanging themselves. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. See, I don't know if they care that much, truth be told, because they're still talking about 18 games. I think that has to be the most outrageous thing I've heard for such a brutal sport, that they want to expand that.
Well, but you know how it is. There's some of them that want 162 games schedule like baseball.
No, I understand, but I'm just saying though. But but the 49ers though, yikes! They lost that game. That was hilarious. Really funny. Sorry, yeah. I think they'll start firing folks.
Well, maybe. Well, how about some of the sports writers who had them in the Super Bowl?
No, well, that's the thing. You know, a lot of gibbering, a lot of jabbering. But I had a feeling they was going to suck. So far, they do.
So far, you qualify for a job with certain sports websites, Sandra.
Well, no, it was just a sort of assumption, especially out here in Sacramento. It's like, oh, yawn, you know what I mean? Between that and the horrible Sacramento Kings, if they're going to stay or go, you know, I'm like...
Maybe they can go to Oklahoma, too?
No, please leave, because all they do here is complain about the stadium. But as I say, if the Maloofs don't want to fund this shit, why should taxpayers do it? You know. If
there you go. Somebody's got to stand. You know, if one community will stand up to these palaces, these monuments to ego.
No. Yeah, as far as I'm looking, if it's such a good deal, you and your bullshit fund this shit. You know what I'm saying? If it's such a good deal. But then it's just crickets when you bring that up. You see what I'm saying?
They get real quiet real quick.
You know, and so, I mean, I'm not even getting started on that. I'm so disgusted because in Sacramento, they tried to put that on a ballot. The people said, oh, hell no, to the no. Because I can barely get a look-see at the Kings. The prices are so high. So why the hell... Do I want to?
Yeah, what's a cheap seat go for there?
Well, right now they hella cheap, if you can imagine that, because the team sucks. I don't know. One time I went to a pre thing and in the nosebleed, I think we paid $15.
And the ticket was the cheapest part of the ride because the hot dog was $35.
Right, and that was to see, you know, just some sort of practice, a scrimmage amongst themselves. But I just wanted to get a look at Chris Webber, so we just sort of went.
Well, Marty wants the Kings to go to Seattle and replace the Sonics, who, you know, went to Oklahoma.
Well, no, I don't mean to be, you know, horrible, because, you know, yeah, it's fun to watch. It's fun to have a pro team. But, see, the Maloofs, they're disgusting with their disgusting casino owning a professional team. It's so unsavory, just that. Because they have this huge casino.
Yeah, it's kind of got a Pete Rose flavor to it, doesn't it?
They have this casino down in Nevada, and they're always bitching about they wanting some palace in Sacramento. I'm like, Sacramento's a small market town. I think we have like a...
Why can't you move some of that casino money?
Well, I think, yes, I'm saying they must have all...
I mean, last I checked, the house still always wins, right?
Exactly. Not only that, but if you look at the SBC Center in San Francisco, I mean, it's a giant... Not my favorite team, but at least they shit is private. It's all pretty much private except for the land. So if they can do it, well, I'm so done with the you know, hundreds of millions from the public so you can get some $8 an hour job selling hot dogs and be happy about it.
Yeah, for part of the year.
Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah, so that was, you know, that's the only thing. Sorry to drift into the sports.
Oh, don't apologize. I need it. That's...
Especially the local stuff. But, you know, I just am sort of appalled when the Kevin Johnson, who is the mayor here, who used to be an NBA with his underage girls and rundown properties in the ghetto, you know.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
He's always gibbering on about the, you know, what we need to do to you know, keep the Kings here. And it's like... Aren't you a one-walking conflict of interest, you bastard?
Yeah, we need to take personal responsibility and keep the Kings in Sacramento.
Listen, I couldn't believe what Juanini was saying about that the homeowner, how he's, you know, real cagey about accepting help. Yeah, that is really, these right-wing people should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, this man is comporting himself unbelievably, you know?
With genuine plebeian dignity. Yes.
Oh, it's incredible, you know, and it's like, well, trying to go through the normal channels. They should be, that's fire chief. That's just shame, shame, shame. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, and it is, and I don't know if you heard it or not, but, you know, that right-wing email I got was, Jesus.
Oh, no, that one, too. I was listening. I heard that. I was just like, I can do, you know, save your horrible family stories. That's a made-up shit that they always come up with, Bob. I've heard them stories before.
Have you? Me too. Yes. I've heard those stories too. That's that they're all. They've always got one.
The same family must be because you know it's the same dribble drabble. It's like every opportunity is afforded these people, and they don't want to do it. Hence, screw you, and I'm okay. You know, I mean, they always have that. Straw man to justify, you know, the parasite producer line that they want to run. But this house burning, have them. I think that shit make them look pretty horrible. I have to say.
Well, it does, and it's just it. I do love you know being lectured on personal responsibility when it's our class that's doing all the personal responsibility.
Oh, no, that email was, I mean, I was, like, sitting here thinking, oh, no, you know, and the point of that being what? To justify the really selfish, hateful, treatment that they would like to dole out to anyone who's struggling in this country? Screw that.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it's all a big die-mf-er, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
I mean, isn't this Alan Grayson, you know, go die and die quickly?
Well, exactly, and it's just sort of, you know, the fact that there's so much support for that dogma, too, is also very demoralizing. But, like I said, I was quite happy that Obama, you know, didn't sign that bullshit, I tell you.
Well, it's nice to see, well, like I said, you know, it's nice to see, it's nice to see him get something right.
Something. Anyway, listen, I'll let you go. Have a good evening.
All right, you take care. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see, about a quarter till the top of the hour. A couple of things. A little correction out there coming from our assistant sports editor Marty, who says actually it was Randall Cunningham who was Moss's first quarterback, and I had forgotten about that, but I do believe Marty is correct. Jack writing in on the notary thing. Maybe it was decided that the notary bill was not small enough of an incremental change for average Americans not to notice, and it would provoke too much dissent. And unlike home mortgages, of which the average person is no expert, having a document notarized is a simple thing to understand. A bill like this, if publicized, could easily be comprehended by the average American, unlike bills that change banking, derivatives, commodities, and so forth. So maybe it just wasn't far enough under the radar? Indeed. And coming in from Jude, a reminder. This is an anniversary of sorts, and it is a sickening one. It is the 7th day of October. This is the 10th anniversary of our horrible, horrible, soul-bending, back-breaking anniversary, or misadventure in Afghanistan. 10 years. Jesus, with the help of our allies, we had eradicated global fascism in less time. The Second World War began in, what, September 1939? And ended in August 1946. And we, on the other hand, are still in Afghanistan trying to figure out why we're there, whether we want to leave, and if we do, how to. Meanwhile, the Karzai government has gone into direct face-to-face talks with the Taliban. Here's the fun part. We weren't invited. Oh, this is going to work out nicely. Thanks for the reminder, Jude. Onward, if there's anybody still there. We shall certainly find out. No. Okay. Jim writes in and says, cats to Juanita, feline felicity to you all. None like a good cat. And one last observation before we close for the evening. Everybody has had all manner of good fun with the story of Fox News and the business about jetpacks, right? Right. I mean, it has been all over the place. You know the story. I'm sure I know Malloy covered it. Letterman hit it, CNN covered it, and everybody had a good old high old time making fun of Fox News for getting suckered into offering as true a story from the weekly World News, you know, Bat Boy Found in Cave, Alien Endorses Obama. Maybe that's why Fox News fell for this one, because they can imagine an alien endorsing Obama, but probably a Kenyan one. And the interchange was hilarious. somebody will run into a helicopter. And the bubble-headed bleach blonde. Well, somebody's got to be fiscally... 10,000 at $100,000 apiece? That's $1 billion. But watching it over and over again as I did, and having a damn fine chuckle at it, I might add, I was struck by one other thing. And it's the only reason I bring this up, because everybody else has already done all the good jokes. The part that laid me low was the denouement where they admitted they'd been suckered, only they didn't admit they'd been suckered. After fulminating ad nauseam about this story on Radio Rwanda, Steve Doocy or Brian Kilmeade, whatever, came back on the air and said, well, it turns out that that story wasn't correct. And the Los Angeles Police Department will not be purchasing 10,000 jetpacks. Jetpacks. And that's all. They were caught dead to rights, offering as real news something from the Weekly World News. Did they come on and say, well, we got had? Silly us. No. They are so afraid of their room temperature IQ audience finding out that they're being had, that they couldn't even offer up any sort of a self-deprecatory mea culpa. And therein lies the real humor. Fox News couldn't admit to its own viewers that it had been had by a tabloid that features stories about Robin the Bat Boy. And considering the airplay that it got, they would have been better off doing that. Because the silence is what's funny. And speaking of funny, just to wrap things up and put a nice tidy little bow on it, if you're gonna make an ad, a political ad about West Virginians, you might want to be careful about the casting call. A political firm in Philadelphia was looking to shoot an ad and create an ad to attack my Democrat in name only governor running on nothing but pure ego for the Senate of the United States, Joe Manchin. This is what they came up with. Come on, guys. It'll happen in a minute. I just know it. Or maybe it's been pulled. It ran a little bit ago. How about that? Down the memory hole. Well, as Matt Osborne noted earlier, the memory hole is not a shredder. No, the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, I think it was. Yep, the National Republican Senatorial Committee has pulled their ad now because their casting call got out. The casting call, what did the casting call say? The casting call said, we are going for a hickey blue-collar look. Does that mean they're looking for somebody in a flannel shirt with a big love bite on the side of their neck? I don't know. No, it doesn't mean that. We are going for a hickey blue-collar look. These characters are from West Virginia, so think coal miner trucker looks. These dumbasses have obviously never heard this program. I'll bet I can use words they don't even know. Of course, Joe Manchin took great advantage of it to call on John Racey to disavow the ad. Racey did go on and say, I think it's really dumb. There's the irony. We have a Racey who owns a mansion in the senatorial campaign. We have a Racey who owns a mansion and a mansion who races yachts. By God, there's nothing like getting to vote for one of the, that common clay sort of, right. A GOP official said, the ad was due to rotate out anyway in a few days and be replaced with a new one. But clearly the Democrats want to use this to distract from Manchin's record, and we have no intention of letting them. So expect it to be replaced with a new ad soon. The casting call for that one calls for people with big ears and buggy eyes to bring their banjos to the audition. It's a real shame, though, I couldn't play the audio because those guys, you know what? You know what they sound like? They sound like guys from Philadelphia. Here's a hint. Philadelphia people don't even remotely sound like West Virginia people, because, after all, we're hillbillies. Oh, here we go. Oh, it went. This is cute. This is a total tease. It almost ran, and then it. And I swear, I'm pretty sure it's not my inner tubes connection.
Obama's messing things up.
Spending money we don't have.
Yeah.
Stimulus, Obama.
Stimulus, Obama. You know, I was down to the loading docks the other day, and the guy came up and said, hey, buddy, you know what time it is? And I said, what do I look like? Big effing Ben? Buy a watch, you bum. Go get me a cheesesteak.
Care?
Yeah, and Joe Manchin supported it all.
Joe's not bad as governor, but when he's with Obama,
he turns into Washington Joe.
And Washington.
You know, Joe's not bad when he's with Obama, but you know, when he's governor. But when he's with Obama and he's wearing those hooker heels and that wig, oh, it's disgusting, I tell you. It's disgusting. They even went so far as to say, bring old, beaten-up, not-new-looking trucker hats. That just loves me some stereotypes, don't you? Yeah, I know. Jesus. That Obama. That Manchin. Washington Joe. Jesus Christ. Does this mean I qualify for like a $200,000 a year job in Philadelphia? On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. Well, that's the program for tonight. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night for Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, whether it's Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, our op-ed columnist from Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, Reverbo. Never mind the jetpacks. Reverbo's got helium-filled pants. Remember, those are the pants of tomorrow, today. My head writer is David in Tennessee. All of this comes your way by virtue of the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. John Fox is our chief engineer. Ben Birch makes everything happen via WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Hey, it's time for, speaking of Pennsylvania, it's time for the Rick Smith Show, live from Pennsylvania. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.